There are so many amazing free plugins available for download right now to help you with your production and mixing. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/plugins to download and get access to a bunch of free and premium plugins on Plugin Boutique. Happy mixing, my friends, and enjoy the show.
One, two, three.
Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I am your host, DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Legacy Lou.
I'm an old UAD plugin. I'm out of date. Somebody update me.
All right. We have a good episode for you today. This is an interesting topic that I'm hoping is going to help a lot of y'all, especially on your continued pursuit for knowledge and getting better, you know, trying to find ways to get better at your craft. And this is a list of things that are wrong or
misleading.
Red flags, yeah, disinformation, red flags.
Or not entirely true.
Yeah, things that are just wrong things that you hear on the internet. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. And I guess we'll just go right into it. We'll keep this a shorter episode here.
All right.
But I think the first one that we're going to talk about is when you hear anybody say, you always have to,
or
this is a must.
This is a must, yeah.
This is a must. Always. You are stupid if you don't.
Or I never.
I never. These are not... Okay, this is bad advice.
Yeah, honestly, if you guys have watched Star Wars, y'all know the phrase, only a Sith deals in absolutes. In other words, don't be a Sith.
There you go. And truly, I would say that that is a big part of the music production world. We see that a lot, especially on the YouTube channel. YouTube is amazing for like open source information here, but the problem with YouTube is that anybody can give the information.
And it doesn't have to be true.
Yeah, exactly. So it could be someone that doesn't know or they're lesser experienced. And honestly, sometimes that's us. I'm not going to claim that we know everything.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think one of the surefire ways to test to find out is find out if that person is already doing what you want to do, you know.
Yep.
And then also if you like that person's work.
To be honest, I think the biggest flag that I've ever seen is when people talk about I will never do this without ever having actually tried the opposite. Like, I've met people who they'll give somebody advice that I know of their history and they'll say, oh, I never do that. I'm like, I've never heard of you even trying it once. How do you know that wouldn't work? You know?
Yeah.
The reality is some people will use the words like never or I always because of a past experience. But do you know if they even have that experience? Half the people on YouTube never actually stepped into a major playing role in a major production.
No, that's true. And so that's like a big thing that I talk about is getting your information from the right source to begin with, which is a whole nother topic. But
yeah,
you do want to get your information from the right sources. So if you're on YouTube, first off, do you like the dude's mixes? Second off, is he at where you want to be?
I think
is he or she at where you want to be?
I think the next one is also tying directly into this, which is, now that you're getting the information from people that you actually see doing what you want to do, do they themselves actually know what they're doing? Because DK and I especially have called this out on many people. I know for a fact not everybody in high positions knows everything that they're talking about. Everybody's flawed. Everybody's human. But not always do the accolades mean they know what they're talking about.
Yeah. So, you know, just being wary, and sometimes at the opposite sense, this is something that you can be really prideful and say, I have nothing to learn from someone. If you've ever said that, then shame on you as well.
Exactly.
There's always something to learn from everyone around you. And yep. If you've ever thought I have nothing to learn from this someone because they're much lower than me, then 100% shame on you. There's from an intern, from a homeless man, from parents, from anybody, there's something that you can learn if you keep a humble heart. So that's the first thing. And going back to the absolutes, right? Anybody that deals in absolutes is absolutely like, it's. I know that they're passionate about something, but I would say a great indicator for, you know, step warily, like be careful listening to this person's information is if they deal in absolutes. Like, it's always works. It never works. Those things are just careful. It doesn't mean that it has ever worked for them. But if they say you must always do this every single time, or you should must never do this ever, no matter the situation, those are scary words that you should not listen to. So that's bad information.
I think another thing that we can move to is different mix techniques that we've heard that are either misleading or just not always true. My favorite one to tell people about is Seek and Destroy. It's a great song from Metallica, but it's also a very misleading way of mixing. If you don't go into it without pushing the gain 30 decibels like everybody does. A lot of times Seek and Destroy is like if you hear something but you can't pinpoint where it's so at.
Let's define, please define Seek and Destroy.
What does that mean? A lot of times what people will do is they'll hear a sound, they'll say, oh, there's some ringing overtones or there's something I just don't like about it. The first thing they'll do is reach for a frequency. They'll put it to the tightest Q that they can. And then they'll boost it like 10, 20, 30 decibels and exaggerate it until they hear something they don't like, which is actually wrong because realistically, anything boosted 30 decibels is annoying.
Yeah, especially with that tight of a cue.
Exactly. Now, the proper way of going about this is just to start off with your ears. Just listen in. And if something really does stand out for you, focus on that range and do small movements if you really have to boost it. But what I like to do is just start dipping the frequency. Go the opposite route and see if it actually cleans up in that range. If not, chances are it's somewhere else. But most people will exaggerate the EQ.
And yeah, and just to piggyback off on that idea and talk a little bit, explain a little bit more. It's the problem is when people seek and destroy, trying to find a spot that they didn't think needed fixing before. So it's kind of the idea of you boost everything and sweep through the entire frequency spectrum to see if there's anything that you can kill. And that's not the right way of thinking about it. Usually you hear something, that's the first thing. You got to hear something and think, oh, that needs cutting, and then you boost to figure out exactly where it is. Yep. Not, oh, I don't necessarily hear anything. I'm just going to kind of go through it to sweep and figure it out. I don't think that that's as useful. It's exactly. Not as useful. So yeah, if you hear something, because at the same time, if you cut out too many resonances,
you start to kill the life of the vocal.
Yeah.
The source guitars especially.
The character of the recording does go missing if you cut too many peak resonances.
I mean, think about it. We all resonate at a different frequency. The funny thing is, that's actually kind of why we have such a unique voice.
Yeah, of course. So I think that's another really great advice, something to be wary about, is not to just seek and destroy. And that's something that we use in the industry here as a name, right? Not to just go out and look for something to cut out in the EQ, but to actually listen first. And I think that goes into everything. Whenever you're comparing plugins, whenever you're comparing compressors or a specific type of anything, even an EQ move that you made, like always to gain match and to bypass it. Use your ears and see if it actually helps.
There we go, saying always.
There you go. And I think that that's one of those instances where always is acceptable, right?
Yeah. Because you do always want to use your ears. Like make sure that what you're doing is right.
Yeah, do it intentionally.
Right for what you're after.
Yeah, this is the reason why I'm not a fan of templates, because templates are presets in general, because it forces you to not think about things.
Yeah, have you checked out the one I've been giving away?
Uh-uh.
So it's kind of funny. A lot of people keep emailing me about it, saying like, oh, I thought there was going to be like Waves plugins on this, like, you know, trap settings for vocals or something, like with the music that you do. I'm like, every vocal I work on is different, you know, so all my plugins are just set to default, and it's just an EQ set to default, a compressor set with a really high threshold so it doesn't do anything, and a de-esser, same thing, really high so it doesn't do anything at start because I don't know the vocalist sound on that recording yet.
Yeah.
That's why templates have never been my favorite.
Yeah, and presets and stuff. So if you, and I'm not going to say that that doesn't work, because for some people, if you don't want to think about it, if you don't care about it, if it's working for you, that's one thing.
But
I'm not
going to
say that never works.
A unique template then.
Yeah, and I was going to say that, not that it never works, but that kind of goes against the main point of mixing, which is to be intentional about it, to think about things, to use your ears to listen as both consumer and as an analyst.
As a template for recording, I get it if it's like something that's based around your voice. Like, for instance, I have a template for Keisha. It always works for Keisha because she's always in the same booth, recording in the same mic, recording through the same setup. So because of that, I kind of know the resonance of the room and what I want to cut. I know how loud she tends to be and what overcompression sounds like for her. So I tend to start it a little high. And if it needs a little more dialing in, great. But it's a great starting point. But it's not the end-all, be-all sound for her. At the end of the day, she still sends it out to get mixed. She still sends it out to get mastered. And, you know, it's not the final product when you're starting with templates.
Yeah, and I build my own presets all the time with different plugins.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think it's that you shouldn't use it. It's more about just as you speed up your workflow, as you use presets, and maybe it's your first time using a plugin, so you want to kind of learn about it, so you're using presets. That's a good starting point.
Exactly.
You know, and it's usually not a, oh, pick and leave it be. There's only one preset in my entire arsenal of plugins where I like set it and leave it be. And I don't think that that's the case for almost every plugin. You just got to make sure that you don't forget to use your ears.
Do you know about my favorite mistake I ever did on FabFilter plugins?
What's that?
Either I installed it wrong, or I did not know that you have to install the presets separately, because apparently there's a preset file whenever I try to load them.
And yours doesn't have it.
All of my FabFilter plugins do not have a single preset, and I love it because it kind of just forced me to learn some of these plugins, like Saturn. When I first got it, I was like, how exactly does
this
work?
That's weird that yours doesn't. So it's not just your Q3, it's everything.
It's everything. So it's my favorite little thing, because now any preset that's on it is something that I've uniquely made that kind of is a great starting point for something I'm after. Like one of my settings is called 808 distortion, but the mix knob is all the way at zero in all the settings. So
yeah.
I just blend to taste for something that I typically like, but I still have to maneuver through it. It's not like it works instantly.
Yeah. Another thing is that people usually get wrong that you should be careful with is soundproofing versus sound treatment.
Oh, my God. Check out my story today. Yeah, that one is a big irk for me. So you guys know, like, I do a lot of studio design for people in consultation on design. And one of the biggest misunderstandings is actually two of the biggest misunderstandings is the difference between soundproofing and acoustic treatment. And then what actual acoustic treatment is doing versus what people think it's doing and what materials people are buying to try to get it done.
For example, like those 1 or 2 inch thick foams. Perforated foam things that you buy on Amazon, yeah. Or whatever.
I'm not going to say the name of the brand, but everybody knows the brand that has the pyramid foam and have the wavy foam and all that kind of stuff. But basically, you're just
that's if
directly.
You get the brand name stuff.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's if you pay a little bit more for the brand
I went
name
to
stuff.
Downtown
they
LA.
Sell it at Guitar Center, right?
Yeah, I went I to downtown LA and I found the cheaper alternative. But the funny thing
you
is,
can buy
you know
it on
who's
Amazon
selling
for
them?
Cheap too.
You know who's selling them? The couch manufacturer warehouses in downtown LA. They're couch cushions.
Yeah, and more importantly, they're only like an inch thick, and if it's 1 inch thick, but it's a zigzag formation, then the average is like half an inch thick.
Exactly.
So it does nothing because frequencies have
to. Yeah, it might help with like dulling out some of the top end reflection in your room, maybe. But the one thing that I have a huge irk with is I keep seeing ads saying, oh, buy this like cool looking shapened piece of panel that's like at most an inch thick, but it's really hollow and everything. It's going to soundproof your room. And then they put like 8 little squares on a wall and they're like, see, soundproofed your room. I'm like, no, soundproofing has to do more with mass and space with the air gaps and everything. But it has nothing to do with the foam on your wall.
Yeah,
that's more sound treatment. And that's the biggest thing. I know a lot of people say, fuck it, I'm just going to say the name. Arlex will soundproof your room. No, it will not. They do have products like their mass-loaded vinyl products that you can use in construction, but soundproofing will run you tens of thousands of dollars. For some people, it's cost them over $100,000. For some, even more. But if you really want to get into those kind of things, like send me an email, send me a DM. I can help you figure that out, what's right for your needs, because everybody's needs are different. But I keep hearing people ask me about, you know, I bought this soundproofing material, but my neighbors can still hear me.
Yeah.
And then I find out they bought foam
so
and just glued
let's
it
define
to the wall.
Them. Let's define them real quick. So soundproofing, sure. Again, and we have a previous episode where we dive a little bit further into this. But soundproofing is the prevention of sound crossing over into a different room or leaving a certain area. So yep. If you soundproof a room, that means sound can neither go into the room or out of the room.
Ideally speaking, it's almost airtight. And by almost, I mean like if you can get a flashlight, shine it to a corner and light got through, it's not soundproof.
Yeah. And And here's the thing. Here's another thing, too. Acoustic treatment or sound treatment is dampening or changing the reflections within the room to make the inside echoes be nicer.
Yeah.
Or to be more controlled.
You'll drop the echo in the room, like the flutter echo that you'll hear when you clap and all that. Or it'll also help with, like, taming the frequency. For instance, like, trying to tame more low end by putting up bass traps.
But that doesn't make the sound enter or leave the room easier or worse. It's
exactly. Harder. If anything, it's exactly the same most times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you treat your, for example, my little bedroom setup that I have really awesome 6-inch thick, like, bass traps all around the room. And it's in there. It's really dead. It's really nice. All of the frequencies coming out of the speakers are very controlled. But I have not done any construction around the room to cause it to not bleed into the living room. Like, the sound still, just as much as before I put up any treatment, still bleeds into my living room just the same. And so, the inside of the room sounds better. Like, I'm hearing the speakers more and less of the room. So that's the difference between acoustic treatment and soundproofing. And yes, those foam panels that are 2 inches thick or 1 inch thick aren't doing very much. And they're only really taking off a little bit of the top end. We do recommend looking into building your own bass traps or buying your own bass traps or at least thicker material. Yeah. Now, I do know a guy that has made baffles. So he went to a furniture store that makes, like, couches and stuff. And he got this. It was, like, a solid 6 to 8 inch thick cushion.
Damn.
But it was, like, 3 feet by 4 feet. And he would lay it on its side. And he would stack 3 of those up to make a baffle. To make, like, an acoustic absorptive wall in his studio.
That makes kind of sense.
So it was like, I would say it's, like, 8 to 10 inches thick. Yeah. And of, like, just, like, foam.
Yeah.
Of, like, this foam, and it was just a block. There's no indentation, no zigzag, just blocks of cushion foam. Like, it's in your couch, right? And he would literally just stack them up, one right next to the other, and then the third one that's kind of like, and he'd angle them a little bit, and the third one that's going on top, and that's where the vocalist would record her vocals or their vocals.
That is kind of awesome.
Yeah, and like, actually worked really well.
Yeah.
And it was a cheap alternative because baffles are expensive. And they're really flexible. You can put them anywhere that you want.
The funny thing is that a lot of people think that it has to be expensive in order for it to work. I know not just Sylvia Massey, but many other engineers have used things like bookshelves or trinkets. Like, one of my favorite things is people that just get, like, a bookshelf, and then they'll also add, like, little statues, toys, action figures that they collect, whatever. And that's a form of diffusion already in itself. The books actually act as a baffle in that sense. You know what I mean? They have a very absorptive medium behind it. But honestly, like, I've met people who they'll get, like, the mattresses. I know somebody who literally took a bunch of mattresses. They just found them, like, used at a warehouse, this and that, like, people trading in their beds and whatever. They would go to these mattress stores and buy all the used ones that people would trade in for, like, $5, $10, whatever. I forget, because they're not supposed to sell them. He put them in between his walls.
There you go.
And it worked.
That's funny.
That was the funniest thing ever. I'll never forget this guy. He built it out by San Diego, and he wanted to make a drum room for cheap. And he did it. He did it. It actually absolutely worked. But he still kept, like, the air gaps in between, wall within a wall thing. But his total construction for a live room was $5,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's the cheaper end of soundproofing.
Oh, no, that's extremely cheap. That's almost unheard of.
Of soundproofing. Soundproofing,
yeah.
So that's awesome. That's a good story. I'm going to go on to the next thing. Another red flag.
I don't recommend it, though. That's not fire safe. Like, your house will burn down if anything goes wrong. Don't do that. Like, he was just being cheap.
Yeah, there you go.
Don't do that.
Thank you. But another thing, and this is a red flag in general. I see this a lot, and I hate to say it because we are in LA, and LA is different. Everybody's really trying to get that bag, you know, really trying to work and hustle, and good on everybody, and I really hope everybody does well out here. But that being said, a red flag when it comes to interacting with someone in the music industry is someone that name drops immediately a lot and hard. So, oh, I worked with this person, like, within the first 30 seconds of meeting them. And that is a huge red flag. extremely, because if they were truly a big deal, they wouldn't have to explain themselves.
Oh, yeah.
And I would have to say, like, granted, it's one thing to, like, you know, build authority. Like, when I say, when you've said, we've worked on this to, like, build authority before we explain about something. But it's like, that's definitely something that where you got to read the person. If they're really doing it for the clout or just chasing, like, you know what I'm saying? There's moments where that can, do not be stargazed by someone who has worked with someone when actually all they did was serve coffee to that person.
You know how many people I've met that have tried to claim credits on something that they didn't even sit for?
There you go. So it's one thing where you claim credits. So even if you don't claim credits and if it's just saying I worked with that person, like don't stargaze. Be very wary. And if for anybody that's listening that does have nice credits, dude, that doesn't look cool. And no, people like me that are the people like us where I'm not saying that we're big deals, but that have more experience in the upper tiers.
We've got plenty of friends with diamond plaques and everything.
And I guarantee none of them do that.
No, none of them do.
Especially the cool ones that actually matter and are relevant today.
And they're actually, fun fact, if you ever meet somebody with accolades that are, you know, relatively impressive, because I live under a rock, I don't know what's impressive nowadays. But the funny thing is, those are also some of the most humble and polite people I've ever met. If you ever met a douchebag that's telling you you should do something they say because of their accolades and you won't get far if they don't, you know, whatever, that's a huge red flag. Like I said, some of the most successful people in our industry are actually very kind, very open. They're just busy. But if you approach them openly and everything, you know, they're very kind people.
And then the last thing that I want to bring up before we close out the episode, I think this is a useful one, I think, in general, is kind of going back to the relevancy of who you're learning from, is when people say that music is no longer relevant. So this comes from when I hung out with Leslie at Mixed with the Masters a couple years ago. So Leslie said during that week, he said, Leslie Brathway, he said, as soon as you start to think new music is not relevant, then your career is no longer relevant. And I think that that's a big point. We see a lot of YouTubers, granted, like, rock is a big genre and it is relevant, right? But at the same time, if you see someone hating on trap music or hating on a current popular genre and they say they don't understand, that's typically another red flag for they don't know what they're talking about. Or more importantly, they're not open enough or I don't want to say intelligent enough, because that may not be the case, but basically are not open enough to accept that there might be more information out there and that other people might prefer different things. So, and usually that person is set in their ways, so you can learn from them, but they're just not going to be as relevant. And I think that that's important to say. There are huge YouTubers and very big channels with very highly rated, highly regarded reviewers and of various natures. And I'm going to, like, for example, one specific example, and I don't think this is a very light, you know, a light example. Rick Beato, who we all love and know on YouTube, millions of followers, does all sorts of music content, is oftentimes when hearing trap music and he talks about music on the radio, he hates those hi-hat, those stinger hi-hats sounding like bees, you know, and it doesn't like that sound, or like, this song's not in a key, so it can't be musical. Those are examples of, all right, dude.
It obviously worked.
It works. You're saying that about the number one song in the world right now. So I'm not belittling his review. I think his review is relevant, but at the same time, that doesn't mean it's not good. And it doesn't mean you can't learn from it. There's definitely something to learn from. And especially as a professional, it's one thing that you make music for fun, which is totally okay. But as a professional, it is our job to stay up to date. And if we are no longer up to date, then we will lose relevance in the industry. So do not smack talk on genres that you're unfamiliar with or techniques that you're unsure of or that are more new. At the same time, be careful who you listen to that does do that.
Yeah. I don't know if it's necessarily that if you're unaware, you're no longer relevant. But I understand the idea behind it. Because the funny thing is, I say I happily live under a rock. because I just have my own taste, but I'm aware of what people want.
And I think that's, you know what I mean? The big thing.
I don't have to agree with everything. Just like when you make an agreement or talk to people in life, you don't have to argue with them. You just don't necessarily have to agree. But if trap's not your taste, but you get a lot of trap clients, it'd be really dumb to not make yourself aware of what is relevant in trap music as far as your job.
Yeah.
What kind of vocal styles do they have and like? What kind of effects do they like? How to process them? Because it's kind of funny. You see, I know rock is not as relevant as it used to be, but you're seeing the rise of a lot of rock guys again because guess what? People are starting to try to come out with more punk rocks.
Especially like the punk thing, yeah.
Yeah, so guess who's getting a lot of contracts? The rock guys that still are doing that. Why? Because they still stayed relevant. Though they may not have been relevant in the current genre, they still kept pushing, but the funny thing is, if you ask them what their bread and butter was, it wasn't rock for a long time. They went into country. They went into pop. Like, for a minute, country took over and sat alongside trap music. So a lot of the rock guys either went to Nashville or stayed wherever they were and did trap stuff. But once rock came back, they were ready and equipped for what they needed to do. But they knew how to move with the industry. And that's the biggest takeaway from this. Like, you have to be willing to move as a professional. You're not a professional if you stay still.
Yeah, you need to pivot and adapt. It's adapt or die for sure. And I want to kind of go back to what I said and say it's one thing, exactly what you said, it's one thing to not want to work with someone out of taste. Like, for example, it's okay to not like trap music.
Yeah.
But it's another thing to say no trap music is ever good. And it's not as good as
that's
rock
just
music.
Ignorant.
Right? And so avoid ignorance. Please recognize ignorance. Try to be open-minded as best as you can.
And y'all know I love rock.
Always discover. Yeah. And yeah, and I listen to rock songs too. And I'm not a huge fan of trap. If anything, I'm a fan of like soul and funk.
Oh, give me R&B and soul and metal. Mm, best combo ever.
Yeah, and I'm less aware of country, but I will, if you show me a country song, I'll still listen to it intently.
Yeah, I'll rely on my sister-in-law for that one. I'm not so hot in the country realm. I do like working on those records, but I'm not very familiar with the current scene.
And at the same time, as a professional, if someone comes to me and is like, I'd like to work on a country record, one, I'm not very familiar with country stuff, and two, I don't really enjoy country as much as some other genres. So yeah. I, as a professional, will probably, in hopes for this artist to get the best that they can, I will recommend an engineer or a producer that does work on country.
Yeah, and that's honestly still a good move.
It's a great move.
Yeah.
You know, knowing what you're good at and knowing what you enjoy is different from being closed-minded about everything else.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very different thing. So hopefully that helps. Please be safe on the YouTubes and in your learning adventures. The last thing that I want to say, actually, that didn't make the list, but I think it definitely should, is action. I think that there's a lot of learning that comes on YouTube and potentially reading or podcasts, even from this show. Like, I'm really glad a lot of people DM us and talk about how they learn. We're really grateful that everybody has learned so much from the podcast. But it's not just the act of learning. The best way to actually learn practical advice and tips for mixing is to do the work.
Even if you make a mistake, that's fine.
Trial and error is one of the best ways to learn.
Honestly speaking, do you know anybody in our industry that didn't fuck up?
Yeah, no, everybody has, absolutely. Yeah, and it's those that fuck up faster, that mess up faster.
I could be wrong on this. Tizio can correct me if you'd like, but I think I remember talking to him once before. I forget the name of the producer, but one of his bigger clients before CB would actually dock his pay for every mistake he made.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the funny thing is he still stuck it out because it ended up making him the engineer that he is now.
Yeah, I don't know if that's good employment ethics, but...
Yeah, but consider this. Most people would have walked away, but he saw the opportunity in front of him. He saw the circle of people he was working with, and he said, you know what? I'm just not going to make these mistakes anymore. It was okay that he made them. He paid his price, financially speaking, but nonetheless, look where he's at now. He stuck it through, even through the mistakes. Most of us don't have to deal with that. We don't get financially hit if we make a mistake.
Yeah.
That's the magic. You can make as many mistakes as you want, and you probably don't have to go through the same financial turmoil that he had to during that moment. Practice with your friends, run mock sessions with other engineers. That's how I learned.
Yeah. And I think that's a really great point to end on here is please go out and learn. Go out and learn that practical information. Practice. Truly, like, even today I gotten a few texts saying like, yo, just listen to this mix. Can you give me some feedback, some advice? And honestly, the only advice that I truly give, and I don't want to like, you know, I don't want to like dissuade you from listening to the rest of the podcast, like all the other episodes that we have that are about mixing. But at the end of the day, it's about what you do when you're at home working with a client or working with yourself or just practicing.
Yeah. You can take all the advice you'd like and apply it, but you have to apply it.
And to a certain degree, I think that, I don't know if this is a great comparison, but there's a difference between a child that has been told that the stove is hot and is able to be smart enough to never touch the stove, right? Versus the child that was told the stove is hot, but then accidentally burned their hand and now knows for sure why not, you know? And, yeah. And I think that that child that burned their hand on the stove will never, ever do it ever again and will really understand what heat means, what it means to touch the stove, and the consequences that can come from it. So to be honest, to a certain degree, when it comes to audio and learning these skills, please make the mistakes faster.
I have a funny one that's the same analogy, but it's one that I learned from my cousins.
What's that?
You ever met somebody who's never been in a fight but can talk a lot about how they'll fight you? And then they get into a fight and realize they don't know how to fight?
There you go.
Yeah. If you ever wanted to grow up in my family, if you ever wanted to, you know.
That's a weird way of putting it.
Yeah, exactly. my cousins, I would watch them as they would, raise fists to each other, but in a playful way, which was more like, come on, let's get better at fighting. Because the reality is, they grew up in a neighborhood where, like, you know, fights were a regular thing. But the last thing you wanted to do was be unprepared. Anybody could tell you, oh, when you get into a fight, you know, the 1-2 punch, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is, it's a difference between when you've actually practiced it before and you're ready for it. So when an opportunity comes in, you're not just relying on information you were told, but rather the practice that you've put in.
There you go. There's only so much that you can learn at the gym. It's time to go in and practice.
We got to go back to boxing classes.
Yeah.
Yeah, kickboxing specifically. I want to kick more
things.
That's
what we did. Yeah, we did do that. I forgot about that. I forgot that we did that together.
We should do more.
Yeah. So on that note, we are sponsored. Thank you to our sponsor, iZotope. We love iZotope so much.
I love you.
iZotope, go to iZotope.com/MMPodcast to get 10% off your next order. Or instead of a 7-day free trial, get a whole 30-day free trial to their monthly subscription bundle, their everything bundle. It's really great. We use iZotope products every single day. So one more time, that's iZotope.com/MMPodcast. Go check that out. And on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
1, 2, 3.
Hey, what up? It's DK. Thank you so much for listening to the Mixing Music Podcast. I just want to do a quick plug. Did you know that I write kids' books? If you have children, nieces, nephews, I have books that are totally available for free or $10 on Amazon for physical copies. You can go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/kidsbooks to get access and learn more about that. Thank you for all of your support. Now let's get back to the show.